The March 11th, 2025 regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation, and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a blue speaker card and give it to staff. If you're participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you'll be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item. If you want to speak on a petition, once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you wish to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if in person, fill out the speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then address any additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. First order of business is the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Need a second?
Full second.
Voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Was that an opposition or was it just a delay? Okay, that was a delay. So agenda approved. Next, we have notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Just want to make clear that we did not actually have the Finance Committee meeting this morning because we did not have a quorum. So we will move on to, there are no items to be removed from the final agenda, no items requested to be withdrawn. On the consent agenda, we have the approval of the February 18th, 2025 meeting minutes.
So moved.
Full second.
All right, we will do a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
I'll give it a little beep. All right, next we have old business that is none, and so we're going to move on to regular business. Mr. Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Members of the Commission, this is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here at the MPC. Our first item today is a request for a variance in association with, a variance in association with a general development plan at 1940 President Street. There we go. All right. And you can see the subject parcel on this aerial image on your screen. Again, the address is not there, unfortunately. It's 1940 East President Street specifically. The future land use for this parcel is suburban commercial, and you can see that it is surrounded by some light and heavy industrial, as well as some single family or low density residential that's just across President Street. The zoning map for this particular parcel it's part of a PVC that actually was effectuated back in 2002, I believe. But you can see that there are still surrounding areas that are heavy industrial, as well as some within the city of Savannah that are RMF and BC, and that low density residential that is just to the south. All right. So we have a couple of views of the subject parcel here. You can see on the top, that is the view from President Street looking north. On the bottom, from Wallstrom looking west, that is toward the Waffle House. The parcel is approximately 3.36 acres. There are two structures that are proposed here. The first is a 115-room, four-story hotel that is requested to be 50 feet, where a maximum of 36 feet in height is permitted. And the second is a five-story self-storage building, which is requested to be 60 feet, where a maximum of 36 feet is permitted. Adjacent to this, there are existing multi-story apartments. I believe they are three floors. So just to give you a perspective view of what's intended to happen at this location, A and B are the structures that are within the scope of the present request, and C is presently in for a site plan review. A and B are on the parcels within the county, and C is within the jurisdiction of the city of Savannah. Just to show you the site plan here, this is the structure that would be closest to President Street, which would be a hotel, and this is the storage building that would be just to the north of that structure. If this were under typical standards, our understanding of the county's handling of their standards in this case, there actually is a dash here, which would indicate that there is no maximum height for commercial structures at this location. Also significant to note for the record that there are no specific use standards in association with 107B, which is self-storage mini warehouse within the county. Again, what's significant here is during that master plan approval following the rezoning back in 2002, there was a condition that was attached to this. And if you can see it in my cursor, a maximum building height not to exceed 36 feet shall be established, which is consistent with the maximum height allowed within residential districts. And so that is the impetus for this request. In looking at this, staff did note that this is in very close proximity to parcels that are within the city of Savannah. And if this were annexed and an analogous zoning district were applied, the BC zoning district standards, you can see, would permit a height up to 75 feet by right. And if we recall from the previous slide, there is BC zoning right here adjoining the apartments that are already existing. And again, this structure, I believe, is proposed to be something like 70 feet. So, on that basis, staff does recommend approval of the requested variances, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Is the petitioner here to present?
Yes.
I don't know where she attached them. Let's refresh and see. Thank you, Ever. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Robert McCorkle from law firm McCorkle, Johnson & McCoy here on behalf of the petitioner. I've also got Mark Liverman, our project engineer here, as well as Zach Riddle, who is the owner of the parcel subject property today. So, as was mentioned by staff, this property, I have a little bit of history on this property going back a while. This property is owned part of a PBC zoning district in the county, originally developed in 2002. Over the last 20 years, there's been kind of a sequence of developments that have occurred moving from west to east on this site, starting with the Parker's gas station, which you're probably all familiar with, and then there is also a Dollar General on the site, as well as a Waffle House. This is a picture of the location that gives you some perspective of exactly where it is here on President Street. And this is a picture of the site as it sits today with Waffle House here in the rear. Originally, these three sites were set up before they were recombined and subdivided. They were set up as three individual retail sites. And over the course of a couple of decades, there frankly just hasn't been a lot of interest in putting additional retail development there. And over that time period, the owners received multiple phone calls about putting a hotel on the site. And so after a while, it became clear that there was a lot of interest in the site for a hotel purpose, and that this site, frankly, was a good site for a hotel, given its proximity to downtown and its ease of access. The site as a whole is 3.5 acres. The hotel site only needs 2 acres. And so one of the issues that was created through the hotel development was what to do with the kind of orphaned portion of the property in the rear. This is about 1.5 acres. The hotel requires all the street frontage, And so you've got a basically an acre and a half piece of property in a commercial zone that doesn't have any street frontage. And so self-storage made a lot of sense in that location. Doesn't really need street frontage, can be located behind a hotel. Additionally, there have been well over 1,000 apartment units constructed in almost immediate proximity to this piece of property over the last decade or so. You've got the Riverworks at Eastern Wharf. Later today, you're going to hear about the Oxford across the street, the old Madison retail property. You've got Mariner's Grove, and you have the Ellis farther down President Street and immediately behind the property next door. And so all of this makes a self-storage facility make a lot of sense here. Over a year ago, and I just want to explain the one thing about the annexation and why this is in the county. Over a year ago, the owner started talking to the developer, and we started talking to the city about annexation of the property. And originally there was a plan to bring it into the property through annexation, bring water, have water and sewer at the site. If that had happened, it likely would have been BC. There would have been a 75-foot height restriction here, similar to the one next door, and there wouldn't have been a variance necessary. It turns out that this property is part of three legally described industrial areas that are in the county, which I'm sure the county manager knows all about. And pursuant to section 9101 of the city ordinance, and the county has a similar ordinance, these properties are actually by agreement between the county and city can never be annexed into the city. It actually says that in the city ordinance. It does say that the city is required to provide these properties with water and sewer and fire protection. So the property does have water and sewer through the city. Also important to note, the property is taxed by the city. So even though it's not actually in the city, they do pay both city and county taxes. So here we are today with the proposed development for the site, which is located in the county. The height variance, as was mentioned, is from the PUD as it was originally adopted when these were intended to be small retail sites. And that height that was put in the PUD was 36 feet. We don't get a lot of height variance requests, frankly, in the county. I don't see a lot of them. I haven't had a lot of them in my career, particularly on commercial buildings, just because of lack of water and sewer in a lot of places. You don't have a lot of multifamily kind of commercial projects developed in a lot of unincorporated Chatham County. But this is a fairly unique piece of property in a fairly unique location. And because of this city ordinance and county ordinance that prevents it from being annexed, it's indeed in a unique circumstance. I do want to mention that this work has been going on this site for a couple of years. The property has already been subdivided specifically for the project. The permits are in place. The land disturbance permit has been conditionally approved, subject to this height being approved. Also, the property has cross-access easements with the other commercial properties that are to the west that we just mentioned just a second ago. The agreements through the PUD have already been revised and amended by the PUD members and have been recorded to reestablish the cross easements based on the site plan before you today. So essentially, we're at a point where upon approval of the site plan, the height variance, the land disturbance can immediately begin. And the water and sewer land disturbance work for the city has also been approved pending this variance. The variance, as was mentioned, is for a four-story hotel to be located on the front of the site and a self-storage facility to be located in the rear of the site. Just a couple of notes about the variance. We showed some pictures of what it looks like that were prepared by the architect. And I think the first thing to note is just you're generally not even going to notice the additional height that's on the self-storage facility. You're only going to see it kind of at the edge of the properties. It's a 60-foot building behind a 50-foot building. So you're really not going to perceive it from the road. Additionally, as was mentioned by staff, there has been a hotel approved next door. I believe it's going to be an IHG hotel. This is kind of there. It's four stories tall. It's 50 feet. This is generally the stock setup for an IHG hotel. We showed it in comparison to our site to just show that it will be consistent with the adjacent property next door, which is in the city, which again has a 75-foot height limit, but their building is going to be 50 feet, which is the same height as our building there. This is a good location for height. It's located on a four-lane divided highway. Additionally, we don't really have a lot of neighbors. If you look at the site as a whole, we have the remainder of our commercial property to the west. To the east, we're going to have a 50-foot tall hotel immediately next to one similar to ours. To our rear, to the north, we have a cemetery. So that property will never be developed immediately behind us, so nobody's going to be affected to the rear of us. And then everything else to the north of us is industrial as it currently exists. And so with that, we had some pictures also just to show. This is a picture of Mariner Grove. Mariner Grove and the LS are immediately behind the hotel next door to us. And so as you come down President Street, there's kind of a progression of 40-ish foot tall buildings as you get closer to it. So with that, that's our explanation for our request for the variance. We support staff's recommendation for approval. Again, I've got Mark Liverman here, who's the engineer. If there are any questions that are engineer specific and not for me, he's happy to answer those as well. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions y'all have.
Does the billboard go away?
Does the what?
Does the billboard go away?
The billboard will remain for now. There is an existing lease in place for the billboard.
Does anybody else from the board have any questions?
Mr. Coles.
So, Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Quick question. I may have missed this, and maybe it was not brought up. Has the boundaries of the LePageville, I guess I want to call it development and or community, has that been identified from a historical asset?
And we have impacted at all? We have full survey work and full location of the property markers in connection with the site plan. I'm not sure it's changed over time from a historical standpoint, but all of this, including these lots, were originally laid out in 2002 and then have been confirmed as part of the site plan.
Okay, I just want to try to get some clarification because I know that at one point there was some confusion as to what level or what extents of the boundary of that community and or cemetery existed. So I just wanted to make sure from a historical asset perspective that we've done the necessary due diligence to where once work were to begin, we don't run into issues of, I guess, I don't want to say use the term desecrating, but impacting a historical asset.
I believe that we have, obviously, if they encounter any of that, it'll have an effect on the development of the site. But as far as I know, we should be clear.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Is there any public comment or questions?
Just to add to one comment, by the way, the owner just showed me a text. We did have Whitaker Lab do borings and things over there along the property line, so we did check that prior to submitting. Thank you.
All right, I'll open the floor for a motion.
Motion to accept staff's recommendations.
We'll second.
All right, we will take it to a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nutrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross, are you online?
Yes, I am, and yes.
Thank you. Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywinning?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. Next order of business is map amendment East President Street, zoning from IL to PD, which is 25-000-899-ZA.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. This is Edward Morrow again. The next petition is actually related to the two that follow it. These are all requests, in essence, to amend the final master plan at Eastern Wharf. The first is a request to rezone a property that was excluded from the formation of that PUD, and the following two are the actual amendments to the master plan for inclusion and other changes to that final adopted master plan. This parcel is currently zoned light industrial, and the request is to rezone it to plan development for its inclusion. Can see the future land use indicates the property is downtown expansion, and this is light industrial adjoining plan development here. There's a little bit of heavy industrial. This is the on-ramp for the Truman, just across the street, some DC, downtown commercial. In the course of evaluating this, we determined that there is no active neighborhood association for the Hitch Village Fred Wessels homes. And so that is something that we may want to address moving forward to facilitate engagement. With regard to the zoning history, the initial zoning for Savannah River Landing and Eastern Wharf occurred back in April of 2017, and the stated intent of the PD was to redevelop the approximately 56-acre site in a manner that more closely resembles and extends the landmark historic district just to the west. The original petition included the adoption of PD text, which was appended to the city's zoning ordinance, and a master plan, which established a grid framework for development. At that time, they assigned specific uses to each parcel. That is still the case today. And with the associated master plan amendment, the proposal includes that this parcel would also receive an assignment. I'll come back very quickly just to point out this is the original civic master plan originating back in about 2004 to 2006. That was kind of the inspiration for what was ultimately adopted. And you can see that this parcel was excluded at that time. Something interesting that came up in the course of evaluating with regard to the transportation network, this obviously will be included within those internal and external circulations that were proposed with Savannah River Landing and Eastern Wharf. Public services will be provided by the City of Savannah, and their adequacy will be determined at the time that site development permitting is taking place. But we did find in looking at the data related to CAT service, at present, the data that is obtainable through SAGE has indicated that there is no CAT service. And so with future developments that are coming here, it might be advisable that we seek linkages within our existing transit system so that CAT will have access to this area. With that, staff does recommend approval of this request to rezone. And what you see on your screen is the current master plan that's in effect at this time. And so this would have the effect of zoning this PD. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Is petitioner here to present?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Harold Yellen for the petitioner. The only thing that I can add to what you've heard from staff, the reason this piece on the corner was not added originally at its inception is that when the master plan was first presented, it belonged to the City of Savannah. Somewhere along the way, we swapped with the City of Savannah. We gave the City of Savannah approximately an acre and a half to 2 acres to allow them to widen the Bilbo Canal. And in return, they conveyed to us this corner piece. That's why it's zoned light industrial. And of course, light industrial does not fit at this location. By adding it to our master plan, we literally square off that corner, that southeastern corner. So it actually makes tremendous sense for this to become not only rezoned, but part of our overall master plan. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have, but we fully support staff recommendation.
Any questions from the board? And we do not have any public comment, nobody online.
Thank you. I'll
open the floor for a vote or a motion.
Irvin, so moved to accept staff's recommendation.
Bowles, second.
All right, we'll move to a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. Next up, we have Master Plan Amendment East President Street. That's 25-000900-ZA.
So, Vice Chair, if I could, I'd also like to discuss 901, which is the subsequent item. These are the combined master plan amendments that I spoke of. Again, these three petitions are related, the first to rezone and the second to actually address the amendment of the final approved master plan. So this is the subject parcel, again, the one that was just requested for rezoning. And this master plan amendment is for its inclusion and assignment of uses within the scope of the Eastern Wharf PUD. And then there's also a subsequent request that came in. It was later determined after submission of the application that this warranted review by City Council based on the procedures that were identified within the PUD at the time of its adoption. And so this second related option is an amendment to assign standards to previously undesignated blocks, to reassign uses to blocks that were previously designated, and also to make a slight reallocation of area from an area that was previously dedicated to a new use within the scope of the PUD. There are actually no changes to the PUD itself. These are all just changes to the master plan. So the parcels impacted, you can see, are outlined in yellow on your screen. And so here within the standards as they are presently represented on the city's website, modification to the approved master plan, with the exception of those items described in subsection D, which actually relates to PUD standards, development standards, shall require approval by the mayor and aldermen. So this is the current master plan at the top left hand of your screen. And this is actually the master plan amendment exhibit that was submitted in association with item number 900. And it is probably the most comprehensive, actually. So you can see here, this would include the parcel that was just requested to be rezoned. And also in looking at differences between these two, you can see that there are small adjustments in the reassignment of uses, where there were no specific explanation as to the intended use of these two particular parcels right here. You can see that they are now indicated as all of the other properties are, and that there has been a small adjustment here in the mixed-use commercial allocation for this particular parcel. There's a little bit less open space and a little bit more mixed-use commercial, but generally speaking, the changes are in keeping with the original intent of the plan. So ultimately, this would become the new master plan document once minor clerical changes are made following approval by City Council. And so with that, MPC staff does recommend approval of both of these. Again, there were two petitions, one submitted as number 900, the other is number 901. I will just add a quick disclaimer that approval of this master plan doesn't constitute approval to develop on any parcel, and that issuance of site development permits is contingent upon review and approval of specific development plans by all city reviewing departments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Yellen, did you want to add anything? Any questions from the board? No public comment. The only question that I have is, are we voting on these two separately? Okay. So if there's no other questions, open the floor to a motion for the first item, which is Master Plan Amendment East President Street 25-000900-CA.
Make a motion to accept staff recommendation of approval.
Plunk, second.
Properly moved in second, so we'll take the vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nutrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. So we'll go directly to the next item for a vote or for a motion.
Plunk motion to accept staff recommendation for approval.
Bowles second.
And just for clarification, this is 400-500 Pilot Street. The item number is 25-000901-CA. So we'll go to a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nutrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is a variance to GDP 925 and 1303 East President Street, which is 25-000401-CA.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Our last petition today is a request for the approval of a site development plan related variance that would permit the establishment of a block that would exceed the 500-foot maximum permitted in the D.C. Downtown Commercial Zoning District. This is for property at 925 and 1303 East President Street. You can see the subject parcels on your screen, just south of Savannah River Landing, Eastern Wharf. A little bit of zoning history on this site. These three parcels were rezoned back in 2022. And at that time, actually only two of the subject parcels are within the scope of today's request. The third parcel is currently owned by the City of Savannah. It is the westernmost parcel here that is not within the scope of this petition. So we're only talking about two out of three, but they were rezoned concurrently back in 2022. And at the time, three conditions were attached to this. One that I wanted to point out, the idea that a general master plan, which may be done in phases, shall be required to come back to the Metropolitan Planning Commission prior to a site development plan approval. MPC staff shall approve the master plan upon finding that the uses are permitted and that the project conforms to the applicable development standards. And so today we have one standard in particular that is at issue within the VC zoning district. On your screen, you can see the chart and identified in purple is DC. You can see that the maximum block length in this and all D districts with the exception of DR is 500 feet. So a 500 foot maximum block length is the expectation. Again, this being a district where the intent of the ordinance and the expectation for future development is that it extends the development pattern that was established with the Oglethorpe plan. And so you can see on your screen an excerpt from the purpose of the downtown district's development standards within the D districts are intended to continue historic patterns originating from the Oglethorpe plan. Also, I wanted to highlight that implicit in this is the approval of a recombination plat. The proposed development would require that the two parcels that are subject to today's proceedings be recombined in order to permit this development. And so with that, in looking at the subdivision regulations, Chapter 8, 2022, with regard to streets, it states that continuation of existing street pattern, the arrangement of streets in a subdivision shall provide for the alignment with or the continuation of or the appropriate projection of existing principal streets in surrounding areas. Point C also with regard to intersections notes that streets shall be laid out so as to intersect as nearly as possible at right angles. I'll also just point out this is the property that is immediately south of Savannah River Landing. And I think it's significant that in that civic master plan, obviously the intent with this being a downtown expansion area was that these streets and that gridded pattern to the greatest extent practicable would be extended in all of these surrounding areas. In addition to that, the East Savannah Gateway, the transformation plan also sort of alluded to this idea that even also from this side that you would also begin to see an extension of this gridded pattern into an area that had long been kind of torn apart by industrial development. And so this is a portion of one of the subject parcels right here. And this is the city-owned property on this side. But again, a conceptual sketch indicated the intent to expand this grid pattern in this very same area. This is the Fred Wessels Hitch Village PUD that you all recently amended to change this alignment in order to allow this to this street to be relocated to the other side here. So again, you can see that this has not yet been fully worked out, but there is the intent that there would be a street network that would extend across this city parcel. This particular parcel here that currently contains the Felicity, that parcel was rezoned to RMF, which is a district that does permit a more suburban style of development. But again, because there were no subdivisions that needed to be approved in the course of that development, there was no point at which staff could intervene and say, this is how we probably want to approach this development. But again, because this is going to require that recombination and also because a variance is required, we have the opportunity to kind of look at what is proposed. And so in looking at this, although this is not within a PUD, the DC zoning standards do suggest that we expect a gridded pattern. And further, the subdivision regulations suggest that we should see an extension of the street network that has already been established. And so this is the site plan that is proposed. The dimension that we're talking about is this longest one here. You can see between the two, the annotation that this is about 658.93 square feet. 658.93 feet. This is, just purely for your understanding, a 377-unit apartment building that is proposed. So a significant number of residential units. Also, just to give you a little bit of reference, this building at 658 feet is about as long as the Savannah Convention Center is wide. So if you were to stand next to the Civic Center and the Johnny Mercer Theater, you would still not be standing next to a building that was comparable in length. It exceeds that even at 591 feet. So this is an extremely long building. And in staff's assessment of this petition, there is no hardship associated with the request. Also, in looking at even the structures that are just across the street at Savannah River Landing, you can see the longest one, or actually the two longest ones. You've got 571 for this structure, and then also 619 feet more or less for the structure that will sit here. So this would be the longest of all of these structures. Again, in looking at this, there's no hardship associated with the request. There are no special circumstances or conditions. It's staff's assessment that the request is necessitated by the petitioner's chosen design for the purpose of reducing construction costs. With that, staff does recommend denial of this request. Happy to answer any questions.
Is the petitioner here to speak?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Robert McCorkle from the law firm McCorkle Johnson McCoy here on behalf of the petitioner. My developer client is online participating today, and our engineer, John Giordano for Thompson Hutton, is also here with me today if there are specific questions from a site plan standpoint. The developer we're here on behalf of today is Oxford Properties and also the owner of Riverview President Street. Oxford, in case you don't know, Oxford has developed over 9,000 units throughout the Southeast, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Virginia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, including a project that is being landscaped currently and is constructed in Pooler called Oxford Pooler. They were also have a GC arm and a development arm, and they are the GC that constructed the Ellis apartment complex, which is immediately down the street on President Street on the other side. They have constructed over, or they have developed over 10,000 units additionally for others and constructed those units. They're very experienced in what they do in these areas. They built other projects on President Street already, obviously. The project is a urban style project. So it has a 7-story parking garage, and that garage is wrapped by essentially a 5-story apartment building with 377 units. It has internal courtyards, very similar to what's across the street in Eastern Wharf. This is an exciting development for me personally. I think it's an exciting development for the city. It provides much needed housing units in the city. It also, this property, as I'm sure many of you are familiar with, and this is the crosshatch that shows it, probably know the property because of that building. You're probably familiar with driving past that building when you go down President Street. Until 2022, this property has always been zoned industrial. There were homeless camps living on it. We've got the old warehouse that was on it. The other buildings that used to be on there, which were derelict for a significant period of time, were torn down years ago. I've worked on this project myself, or this site myself, for over a decade, which is hard to even say out loud. It's been vacant that entire time, and has been vacant for a course of decades. And in 2022, the owner who I represented entered into a development agreement with the city of Savannah to provide for the development of this piece of property. And I think all this history is helpful in understanding the site itself. That development agreement did a lot of things. We provided a copy of it to staff. I don't think there's a copy of it in your report. But there were several lawsuits ongoing at the time between the city and the owner that were settled through that development agreement. It also provided for stormwater to drain into the Bilbo Canal to provide stormwater for the site. It provided for the owner to swap land with the city to give the city the land that it needed to extend the Bilbo Canal, which drains almost probably half of downtown, which the city did not have fully budgeted. And so we gave them the land for that. They gave us the Tybee Depot parcel, which is that third piece that was shown on the map earlier to the left to, in order to connect us to the General McIntosh light. We also agreed to contribute up to $2 million towards the construction of the Bilbo Canal so that it could be expanded to address drainage issues throughout downtown. The development agreement also provided for the property to be zoned DC, downtown commercial, which is what it's currently zoned. That zoning went through full processes in 2022. It came before this board and was approved unanimously, and it went to city council and was approved unanimously. Everyone's been eager for this property to be developed, especially after decades of sitting empty. Eastern Wharf finally began being developed and has been developed and is still in the process of being developed pursuant to the last discussion that you heard. It's even better that the first project on this site, which is this one, is for a multifamily development to provide much needed housing units, as I mentioned before. This is a picture of the site from the intersection, which is at Eastern Wharf Drive, which is looking directly over the property where this will be constructed. This is actually what that looks like this morning, because I took this picture this morning from my car sitting at the intersection of Eastern Wharf. So that is the new Felicity apartment building, which is a large scale 4-story apartment building, which shares our rear lot line with this particular project. It's important to note on the site plan, because I think the staff report included part of our site plan, but didn't show the whole thing. And so I'm going to refer back to this a little bit while we talk about it. It's important to note that this is actually dividing this property into two different parcels. It's recombining properties, but it's also dividing the site into two parcels. We are creating a, through this site plan, creating a commercial out parcel here. This divides up the building from the front. This is a right-in, right-out turn, which will be built on President Street. It was agreed to in a development agreement with the city. And so that right-in, right-out will split the parcel from the public road, the only public road that this site abuts, is President Street, and it will be split in two with buildings that are 300 feet or less along President Street. So anybody driving on a public road, the only thing they're going to see is the front of the L of this building and whatever commercial building is constructed on that site. So there we are meeting the design standards for the property. It was stated that we extended this property and are recombining these lots in order to build, accommodate a larger building. It's not actually correct. The reason we're recombining the lots is because those lots existed historically before Eastern Wharf was contemplated and before a traffic light was put at Eastern Wharf Drive. And so if you look back at the old lot lines that were shown and probably shown in your staff report, the existing lot adjacent to Bilbo Canal does not actually reach that new light. And so the property does not connect. And so the recombination is directly down the line of where our entrance road will be constructed to meet up with the light, which again was a requirement of our development agreement with the city. We are in fact connecting to the city grid system. The only city grid system that is connected to this particular subject property before you today is President Street that has a traffic light in that location, which we are expanding our property in order to connect to and construct roads that have right angles directly into our property. I think it's crucial, again, to talk about the fact that we're splitting the property from the other sides. This is a this was part of our application. Again, it was not part of your packet, I don't believe, and it wasn't on the website. But this is part of our application, which shows the dimensions of the actual lots. This is not building dimensions. This is the lot in the block face. So you will see, again, we have a less than 300-foot block face on President Street. This is about 300 feet here. These are less, closer to 200 feet, that are going to be along the west. So if you're on President Street, you will see a right-in, right-out, and essentially faces two separate buildings. If you are in the remainder of our project to the west, you will see a full-turn intersection in the middle of the site and two separate parcels, two separate building faces to the two sides of it. And then the only place that we are asking for this variance is to a singular lot line on our four lot lines. So this variance is limited solely to the rear property line. I think this is important to note because we share a lot line with the facility, the Felicity, which I showed you a picture of earlier. It's a large 4-story apartment complex. It is private. It is gated. There is no public road between us and them. There is no other property between us and them. I went over there this morning just to show some pictures. This is a picture of the Felicity as it stands immediately behind us now. This is a picture of the gate that was open at the time I was over there, but it's gated access. And this is their parking lot looking at the back of our property. And you can see the buildings in Eastern Wharf off here across President Street. So our property line shares a completely fenced fence line with a private piece of property behind us. I say all that to say that this block face variance we're requesting is only going to be visible from people that live in the facility, in the Felicity, in the Felicity, and will be located inside of their gate on private property. It is not going to be visible from the remainder of our project, and it'll have different sized buildings with a split right in, right out visible from President Street. It's not even going to be visible from Perry Lane, which is the road that leads to the Felicity. Perry Lane is a dead-end public street, and when you go down to it, you have to turn into their project through the gate, as I showed before, and their buildings are standing there, so you can't even get to a place where you would be able to see the full breadth of the back of our building. The second important thing to note is let's talk about building size. It was mentioned in the presentation that our building is comparable to the convention center on Hutchinson Island. I had not heard that until I got here today, so we weren't really prepared to respond specifically to that. But I will make note, because I actually represent the state of Georgia for the convention center. And the convention center has a footprint of 480,000 square feet. Our footprint of our building is 125,000 square feet. So it's about one quarter the size of that building. The comparable site to our site, and I believe the question may have been asked, is this comparable to the projects that are across the street? And so I'll come back to that. But this is the Riverworks. This is one of the two Riverworks buildings across the street. That picture I took this morning also is a singular building on a singular block directly across the street in Eastern Wharf. That building is about 600 feet long. The block face is about 600 feet long, very similar to what we're requesting. It is a large-scale, five-story apartment building, parts are four, parts are five, wrapped around a parking deck, which is identical to the project that we are doing with internal courtyards. This is the other Riverworks building. That is also one singular building constructed on one singular block with five stories wrapped around a parking garage. Exactly the same project. If you're curious about what our project is going to look like, it is going to be nearly identical to the structure and the length of those two buildings, which this one, the building may be 590 feet, but the actual block length, which runs out to the river, is over 600 feet, which is the exact same thing we're requesting. There was shown earlier a master plan from 2006. So when that master plan went through, by the way, I believe the original developer of the property through that master plan went bankrupt. What ultimately ended up getting constructed is not what was shown. In the previous item, y'all remember looking at the picture that was shown of the current site plan across the street, and y'all remember there were very large red blocks of land on that property. It was not chopped up as it was in 2006 in small pieces with a grid pattern and squares and all that. That's not what got built. And so what happened is between 2006 and 2020, the developer came back to this body and amended their master plan to remove the grid pattern streets and create 600 foot long blocks to construct two apartment complexes, which I just showed you pictures of. If I had that red picture up there, I could show you. In the 2006 picture, there was a road on a grid pattern running directly through the middle of this building. There was also a road running in a grid pattern directly through the middle of that building. Both of them were removed from the site plan by approval in order to make room for 600 foot long block lengths to construct large-scale apartment complexes wrapping parking decks, which is exactly what we're asking for. We're asking for equal treatment to what they received across the street to build incredibly similar projects. I do want to say, too, that it was also stated that we were not interested in connecting to the other streets and in the project, and there was a concern about connecting to the private, to the roads and them being at right angles. Sorry, I'm trying to find my thing here. And so I think in your site plan, y'all were only shown part of, in your staff report, you're only shown part of our site plan. We were, in fact, asked by staff to confirm that we would connect the streets. And we added a note to our site plan here that makes a note that the future development of the remaining portions of the site will connect to the proposed signalized interest road that we're constructing. You can see here, this is the layout for the future commercial out parcel here, which is lined up exactly at the depth of the commercial out parcel we're creating next door so that these roads can combine in that exact location. And so we did respond to staff's request about that and added a note to the site plan specifically stating that it will connect. Obviously, we have created 90-degree angles here. We have created a grid pattern here that breaks up the property from the front. I can't show you again the petition that was immediately before me, but if you looked at what's directly across the street from us, there are no streets constructed between Bilbo Canal and Eastern Wharf Road. It looks identical to our site. You can kind of see it here. This is our site, which runs from Bilbo Canal to their site here runs from Bilbo Canal to Eastern Wharf Drive. It's not an exact rectangle, but that's the way it's shaped. That parcel, as it was approved in the master plan as part of the grid system of Eastern Wharf. Sorry, as I'm not trying to make everybody sick here. Just to give you some perspective on block lengths, and I know it's hard to see, so I want to expand this so y'all can see it. That block length of the Eastern Wharf grid pattern is about 870 feet wide. This one over here where one of the apartment buildings is built is about 19 feet wide. This one, where this building was already constructed when the satellite image was taken, is 667 feet wide. So even though in 2006 there may have been some master plan that anticipated there being some small grid system that extended the Oglethorpe plan into this area, that's not what ended up getting constructed. It probably wasn't financially feasible. And in order to build these apartment complexes, the plans were amended and approved, and larger apartment complexes and buildings were done here. Again, this block length is over 1,000 feet. And so I show all that just to say I don't want it to be perceived that we don't believe what we're asking for is outside of the scope of what's around us. We acknowledge the fact that that project across the street is a PUD, and ours is DC, and the project behind us is RMF 15. That's all true. But at the end of the day, if you look at the actual sites and you line them up, the site immediately behind us, a private large-scale apartment building, is exactly the same width as our site. The site across the street, which is part of the master plan, is exactly the same width as our site. In fact, it's longer in the rear. And so as far as lining up the street grid is concerned, our project lines up exactly along the street grid that is existing and that has been approved on both of these parcels. And so with that, we have worked very hard at this. I don't want the impression to be that I'm trying to build a 480,000 square foot convention center on this site that is outside the norm of what's around it. We have designed this project to be virtually identical to the two projects that are directly across the street, which were also, though they may not be zoned DC, were expansions of downtown. That's what Eastern Wharf was intended to be. And if you look at an overhead map of actual parcel size, you'll see, that's just another picture of Eastern Wharf, and those are the two buildings adjacent to each other. This is a picture, a satellite image of downtown. And I think it's telling that the Oglethorpe plan as it exists is inside of this area right here. And you can see that the green lines, there are so many green lines and so many small lots that they all combine into one green mass, essentially. And if you expand it out, you can see. But as you cross East Broad and you head out down President Street, the lots look wildly different. So I do understand that there is a sentence in the description of DC that says that it's supposed to be an extension of the pattern, but that's frankly not what has happened as projects have been developed in this area. I don't think Oglethorpe anticipated four lane divided highways and traffic lights either. But what we're trying to do is consistent with all of the projects around us. Their plans were amended. Their sites were recombined. The original plans and master plans were amended by this body in order to remove roads to lengthen block lengths to make specific room for large-scale urban infill apartment development. And that is exactly what we're asking for on a virtually identical scale. And so with that, I would ask for your approval of our request, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions from the board, Mr. Melder?
Thank you. Jay Melder, a question for both Mr. Morrow and you, Mr. McCorkle. I don't know how much to care about 660 feet versus 500. I'll rely on our planners to tell me that because I don't necessarily have a sense of it. But I do think that the really important part of this conversation is that connectivity and is the road and the grid pattern. And I do think that there's a difference between the landmark historic district and a downtown expansion or even a downtown commercial. And maybe this isn't in the ordinance today, but this is a question for you, Mr. McCorkle. What did we miss in NUZO or in the downtown commercial zoning districts that don't mandate or don't incentivize connectivity? I think this is kind of like a very special project because what's going to end up happening here is we're going to have a development from your clients adjacent to President Street that's going to be connected to that downtown expansion with the roads coming through. But then we're going to have the Felicity apartments that are going to be disconnected from that. We're going to have Wheaton Street and East Savannah that are going to be disconnected from that. We're going to have the Hitch Village and the East Side United plans that are going to be disconnected from that. So what did we miss in NUZO or in those new downtown districts that don't incentivize that kind of connectivity? And then second to that is you make a really compelling case, but I do think that even if you look at the Eastern Wharf development as it stands today and the development that you're proposing, albeit it's a fifth of the size of the Eastern Wharf development, the nature of the grid pattern is a little different.
Sure.
And so how do we solve that connectivity issue in what is really, really such an important new development sector of the city?
It's a great question. It's tough. It would have been easier if you were Oglethorpe and you had a blank slate that you were starting from and you were laying it out on a piece of paper looking at woods. You're correct that the Eastern Wharf is several times larger than this site. And so if you're designing a project like the Eastern Wharf, or if you're designing a project like out at Little Neck for the Keller property or something like that, you have the ability to go through a PUD and to design your own grid system from scratch and then make that kind of fit at the connection points that already exist to those property lines. Okay. So for instance, at Eastern Wharf, you have a very large piece of property that connected to General McIntosh on one side and President Street across the other. And so they built their own grid system, but it ultimately only connects to the city grid system at President Street and at General McIntosh. That's the exact same thing that's going to happen with this project. What makes it difficult here is, one, our project doesn't go back to Wheaton Street. This is a cell tower site, which is separate. If you look at the outline of our property, which now actually runs up here, it's not very deep. It's very long. It's not very deep. And so we don't have other roads to connect to. And we are trying to connect to the existing city grid system as it exists adjacent to us, which is what was anticipated in the development agreement, which specifically states we will connect to General McIntosh and we will connect to President Street at the lights. And that's why we're recombining some of these lots in order to make that happen. But I think when you've got private property owners building projects at different times that weren't laid out in some grand scheme, it's very difficult to then go back and create public roads through those parcels. I suppose the city could condemn them and build and force their grid pattern into private properties. But just as a, for instance, the Felicity, I mean, at least I got it right that time. it's a private property owner who is a direct competitor of this particular project. They have built a gated community back there that is completely fenced in. And it's connected to a public road that connected to the existing grid system with a right-of-way that wasn't open at the time that was renamed for Perry Lane. But I say that, Mr. City Manager, to say it's just when you have existing properties that have been there for decades or centuries that have already been chopped up in the manner in which they're chopped up and the public road system has been laid out around them and they don't touch all the roads, it's really difficult to do. We're trying to do it the right way here. I think you'll see on the plans that were before that there's going to be a right in, right out for that project across the street, which is pretty much going to line up with ours. We are expanding this parcel specifically to get it out here to this light. These parcels over here will ultimately connect, and that system will continue as we get towards Hitch Village. And then ultimately, whenever that phase happens, then we'll be having a conversation with the city. The development agreement specifically states that if the developer desires to connect to other public streets other than President Street, General McIntosh, Eastern Wharf, that we will basically request of the city, meet with the city, and based on the land use of that site plan and the design of that site plan, agree with the city collectively of, does it make sense? How do we construct this? What does it look like? So I think we'll have to address that when we get to the western end of this property, because now we don't know what's going to be built there. I don't know what the land use is. I don't know what the site plan is. But for this piece, which is just this, we have tried to design it in such a way as I think is what was contemplated, which was connecting us to the Eastern Wharf Road and the grid system, at least as it exists with us. That may not be a satisfactory answer.
I think that the problem still, it's a fine answer. I mean, if we were all to go do this again, from the city's perspective, I'm sure we would have loved to have seen all of this be one owner and have a PUD, just like we had across President Street. But I do know that, you and others who come here a lot solve a lot of hard problems. And I think this is a problem worth solving, is how do we create connectivity, in between these parcels, in between President Street, in between Perry Lane extension. And you noted them as competitors to your clients, but obviously you've got a huge commercial component, which would only benefit from connectivity and walkability from, I don't know how many hundreds of units the Felicity has. And just from a city planning perspective, I think it would be a really benefit for that connectivity. So those are just my concerns around the connectivity. I know the variance is about the length of the block face. But I just wanted to, kind of express my hope that maybe there's some grand idea here that we can have to provide more connectivity in this part of the city.
And we'll be happy to continue to have that same dialogue with the city as we move forward with it.
Mr. Trigger, did you have a question?
No.
Okay.
I do.
Ms. Irvin?
Questions for staff. I'm just a country lawyer. So let me preface my question as a country lawyer. A variance is a request to modify some type of zoning that a petitioner is falling into some hardship with.
That's correct.
Whereas a PUD looks at the project's impact and a bigger slice of this. Now, I've heard we got the Felicity next door. You look out the back gates, you see it. Why aren't we following a PUD, and why are we doing a variance? Why isn't a PUD the better way to go with this?
I would agree a PUD would absolutely be the better way to do this. Depending on how you read that condition from City Council, it very clearly says that this could happen in the context of a phased development plan, but it does not mean that there could not be coordination beforehand. I personally, just from my experience, because I do process site plans and applications here, It is usually the applicant that you have on hand. This is what this person wants to build at this time. This is what they need to make it happen. They were able to align the financing and all of the other things that are required to make this, you know, lightning strike right now. Rather than saying through the course of a development agreement, and a public hearing process, you were given a zoning district that had very clear, you know, regulations about what the expected pattern of development was. So, you know, that hardship is really the thing that distinguishes this project from the project across the street and the ones that also have large footprints. So while we may say that this is appropriate and consistent, its situation in terms of our regulatory scheme is very different. And so if a PUD is desired, a PUD may be pursued even at this date.
So with respect to all I'm hearing from a standpoint of a hardship would be length. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. Absolutely. There is no hardship with regard to that.
So there isn't a hardship there with respect to that being a variance.
There's no hardship and no basis for variance.
All right, I'm gonna be a country lawyer again. So why are we doing a variance and not a PUD? I guess I should ask that of Mr. McCorkle.
I want to state that first, the property was already rezoned DC specifically for the ultimate development of this project. So through MPC and City Council was approved in 2022 for downtown commercial. Also, I would note that hardship is one consideration, one of the factors of a variance. We get variances and connections with projects all the time. Here, other questions that are involved in those are, does it have a detrimental effect on the neighbors? Don't believe that this does, particularly given that our neighbors are in the exact same boat that we're in. Is our property uniquely situated? I think it is. We are wedged in between a canal and a traffic light. We cannot go east. We cannot go south. We can only go west, and we can't go north. So we also have a traffic light that we have to meet up to. So our property is being extended that number of feet in order to reach the traffic light. And so we have this confined space. So I think that because of our unique location, that a variance in order to extend that block length to get us to that traffic light, I think that we meet that requirement. I do think it's also another one is it consistent with, you know, the surrounding properties? I think we've shown today that it is consistent with the surrounding properties, exactly consistent with the surrounding properties. And it lines up directly across the street and behind us. Honestly, why it was chosen like this instead of as a PUD back in 2000, and again, we worked on this for 10 years, but back in 2022 when this was rezoned, I think part of the concern was, I think the owner of the property intends to sell this property off, portions of it in pieces to have it developed. It wasn't at the time master planned exactly as to what those uses were going to be. We worked with the city to try to choose a zoning and worked with staff and the MPC, frankly, who was supportive of what we were doing to come up with a zone that was appropriate from a use standpoint. I don't think at the time, frankly, when we were going through this, anybody was thinking about 500-foot block faces when we picked the zoning. So it is the singular item as far as whether a PUD's more appropriate than DC. I would say to you that this one thing is the singular item that is an issue on this one portion of this property. And so we meet all the other design standards. The uses are appropriate. The height's appropriate. All of the rest of it. So the only difference really between this, and we still have to go through a site plan approval, which is what we'd be doing if we had a PUD. So the only singular difference is that we are doing this one phase and we have this one issue, which through the PUD process across the street was also removed in order to create these buildings, which we're trying to create. So that's kind of we ended up doing DC back in 2022. We went through it. Everybody agreed that that's what we thought was appropriate. And that's what we have.
So two other questions follow up. So are you saying the restrictions that you're citing would be the fact that you can only go in one direction on this project? Or are you saying the restriction is that there's a traffic light? Or are you saying the restriction is?
I think the restriction is all of those. I'm just saying it's not that it's a hardship. It's that I think the property is uniquely located in that we have a traffic light on one side and we have Bilbo Canal on the other side. And so we have this kind of limited space as it relates, and we have to connect. The city wants us to build an entrance road coming off of President Street, again, 90-degree angles. So in order to make that fit, we have to construct – we needed to expand the block length in order to get there. We could have chopped it up into smaller pieces. I mean, I suppose you could put a road all the way through the middle of this site and chop it up into smaller buildings. I think if we do that, it'd be inconsistent with the manner in which projects, similar projects were developed across the street. And I think that, you know, there was a mention in the staff report about it being a financial concern. Of course it drives up prices. It'll drive up construction costs and ultimately drive up rents, which we don't really want to do, given that what we are asking to do is just completely consistent with what's around us.
So in establishing a PUD, what would then become the obstacles to reaching your goal that you're telling me today?
Well, we'd be back here. I mean, if we had gotten a PUD approved in the first place, we would have drafted design standards. I don't know what they would have been. So it's hard to say we wouldn't have this same requirement had we done a PUD, because I don't know what this body would approve or what city council would approve. But when you do a PUD, you essentially establish your own design standards. You make them up. And so they're basically negotiated between the MPC staff and city staff and the owner of the property. And then, as happened across the street, it happens on every PUD I've ever been involved with. It never gets constructed in the manner in which it's approved, right? So every PUD project has a starting master plan. They start with that. I mean, I'm working on projects in other municipalities and this municipality that might be on their 10th revision. And every time a specific phase comes up and a specific project comes up, almost always there's an amendment to the PUD. You had one today across the street. And as I said before, it was amended before. So the only, to me, the difference is technical and not, it's not a practical difference. If I were in a PUD, I'd have to come back to you for a PUD amendment. And I'd be standing in front of the same body making these exact same arguments, just like they did across the street, and say, please remove this street from the middle of this block and lengthen my block length to 600 feet. Here's my revised master plan. Will you approve it? Instead of doing that, I'm here today saying, here's my site plan for this phase of this project. We would like to have a 600-foot block length. Can you please give me a variance? So we'd be in front of the same bodies asking for the same questions every time we did a phase, which is what typically happens. But here, I don't think the variance distinction is necessarily one other than a technical one of how we're going about doing it.
Edward?
Edward may disagree.
I'm so sorry, if I could. So, again, just because we've been having these conversations somewhat regularly, there is a certain sanctity. I can't think of a better word to the hardship and the power of a board to grant a variance via that means. There is something about the nature of that particular tool that if you misuse it, you place yourself on a different footing. And that ultimately is what this is about. This is not a dispute about the appropriateness. This building is extremely large, but it is consistent with other very large buildings. It is the means through which the applicant is attempting to achieve this development. And the more we continue to misuse this particular tool without creating shades of gray. So we've had this conversation with regard to public benefit as the basis of various allowances. We have talked about hardship standard. We are looking for others. This is about the misuse of a tool. I feel like I say this regularly.
No, and you're heading where I was heading with Mr. McCorkle, which is I've been on this board long enough to know that we get fussed at about you're doing spot zoning, you're doing spot this, and you're doing spot that. And to me, a PUD is less restrictive as opposed to the variance, and it would allow them to do everything that I'm hearing council say they want to do.
Right.
And so that's why I've been sort of poking along like a country lawyer trying to figure out exactly at which point we're going to exercise our authority to once again step around and establish some precedent that I'm never comfortable with establishing precedent when someone else is going to come and we're going to look at them and say no. And that person is going to say, but you did it for so-and-so. It's happened.
It's happening now. Because you did it across the street.
And that's my last question. That's it. That's my summation on the issue. That's where I stand right now.
In response to what Edward said, I do think when you do a PUD, what's adopted as the master plan is the zoning. It is the zoning. So I just want to be clear. There is no zoning district when you adopt a PUD. There is none. The PUD is the zoning itself. So that PUD has design standards about, could be block length, could be height, could be whatever it is. That is the zoning. There is no other zoning thing. So every time you amend that PUD, and this is just my opinion, every time you amend that PUD, you are asking for a variance to vary the already established zoning district that exists for that site. And then also, as an example, the first item on the agenda today was a variance for height. It was my project. It was a variance for height for a hotel and a self-storage facility. And the discussion, we had a staff recommendation for approval read by Mr. Morrow on that particular project because, and it's also a variance, and it was also based on the buildings that were around it and the history of the site and how it ultimately got developed, and it was approved unanimously because I do think context matters. And I think it's less of a concern about is it the letters PUD or the letters DC as it is what's around it, how does it affect the adjacent properties. I think it does matter. I think the precedent across the street matters, not because I'm not claiming that it's precedent. You're not bound by precedent. What I'm claiming is it is in immediate proximity to us in a project that is virtually identical. And this body amended a PUD map, which is essentially a variance request, to make those projects possible. And because they're there, it makes our project not bound by precedent, but consistent with the surrounding properties. That was
split hairs, but wouldn't a PUD allow you to deviate from standard zoning?
No.
Yes. PUD allows you that flexibility, right?
When it's adopted, but once it's adopted, it's the same as a zoning ordinance. And so in order to amend it, once your master plan is adopted, you can't vary from it. And so if you want to vary it, you have to come back to this body and ask for permission, which is what I'm doing. Same thing as what I'm doing here today.
But my last question, I always thought that a PUD gave you more flexibility than a variance because a variance is very much in a box, whereas the PUD allows you to sort of, you have that flexibility to move around within your project. And if it requires something minor, I mean, a height amendment to me is different. A variance for height is different from a variance for what we're talking about here in my mind. And maybe that's just me being a straight country lawyer. I look at it totally different. It's just, it's like apples and oranges to me because you're saying to me that you're putting together a project. And I like the fact that you're putting a project that land's been vacant long enough. But I'm thinking the vehicle that we're traveling is the difference between me and a Yugo or you and a Rolls Royce. And to me, it's that glaring type thing to me where I'm saying it seems like a variance, and I get it, but I'm still searching for that issue of what's the hardship, what's the issue, why are we here, and why not a PUD? And that's the way you applied for the application, and I'm not arguing with you about that. That was your application that you applied for, and you did it that way. I just want to get a better understanding. I think I'm about there now.
The two simple answers for me for why not a PUD from a development standpoint, I think every developer would probably tell you the same answer. And if Harold was still here, he'd probably tell you the same answer, which is either one, you have a very large piece of property, much larger than what we have here. The one across the street, for instance, again, Keller's property, for instance, you have a large piece of property where you're trying to design, you know, an overall project with, et cetera. That's one reason. The other reason is because your project, you cannot meet multiple design standards in the zoning ordinance. So if my property is zoned DC and I need a height variance, a block width variance, I need five different variances. Well, rather than go and ask for five variances, we would go and ask for a PUD so that we can draft our own design guidelines. But in a situation like this, and at least throughout my career has always been the case, when you have a piece of property that generally the uses are correct and the standards are fine and it makes sense, and if you read what it's for, it makes sense for where we are and you can meet everything, but maybe you got one thing you might need a variance for, we always try to stay inside of the zoning ordinance as it exists and then operate on individual variances based on the specific building that's being constructed, a specific project as it comes up. But just for me, those are the two reasons why not a PUD. And I think both of them apply here. This isn't a rather large, typical PUD side project, and it's also not one where we are not meeting a ton of standards. I think it's almost exactly like the height on the other site. It's a design standard specific to the exterior appearance of the building, and it is the sole item that we're asking for relief from. Otherwise, we are parking it. It meets the height. It meets every single other requirement. And so, anyway, that's fine. We've beaten it to death, and I know you're a lot, you're a very good lawyer, and I appreciate the question and the conversation.
Thank you, Philip.
Mr. Melder.
Can I ask a question of Mr. Morrow? Just as a helpful instructive for me, what was the, and understand that we're trying to keep faithful to what a variance is and the thresholds by which we need to meet a variance. What was the hardship that MPC staff found to be acceptable in the variance that was approved earlier today?
So if I could note for the record, that is a slightly different type of a plan development simply because within the county, if a parcel adjoins a particular level of thoroughfare, it is automatically assigned as a plan development district. So that was actually an amendment to an approved master plan. It was not really the zoning type of PUD that we're talking about. But what's different there, we have also had kind of ongoing conversations about some county standards lagging just a little. And so in truth, the ability to build structures that are of kind of modern heights is a thing that we have seen. We saw it with what we call the Florida parcel. There's an apartment building that is down Ogeechee Road. We've had a couple of other, and come to think of it, they've all been residential for the most part. But there's sort of a conflict with sort of modern development practices and height standards in the county at present. And so I would say that is the significant difference.
And in addition, Mr. Melder, the other thing is that that particular case, you had a city and a county zoning. So you had two different ordinances that we were working with, mm-hmm. along with development criteria that was different with regards to annexation and things of that nature that you don't have here. And I think that that's a huge difference. In this particular case, again, you know, it is a variance. When this came in for rezoning in 2022, one of the things that we had a lot of discussion about was how this would overall fit into that whole side of the street, because we were pushing at that time to have some type of gateway plan because you're coming up and that's one of the things that you see coming into the city. And that was one of the things that we were concerned about as staff. But this is just for variant. It's for the width of the building in order to try to keep a set of standards, as you know, that is currently in place.
Those are very helpful answers. Thank you. I think what I'm trying to drill down to is probably the same thing my colleague is this a recommendation from MPC based on the process or based on the quality of the design? I mean, I think that you probably feel strongly about the size of the building, Mr. Morrow, and I can respect that. But if this was a PUD and this was the master plan for a PUD, would we be having the same issues with the 650-foot block span?
Unlikely, because the block size or the fact that the development is planned to take place within the context of blocks is sort of a character-defining feature of a downtown district. That is what differentiates RMF. Unfortunately, RMF found its way into this window. The parcel down the street, these are BC, these are suburban-oriented districts where you will not find a block standard.
So I'm taking that to mean it's not necessarily the quality of the design that you take issue with, it's what's being asked to do within its current zoning form. Right.
Yes, sir. Yeah, this is an area where, as Mr. McCorkle laid out, you've now got a suburban style development to the south. They're building, basically the only thing you're going to have back here is a private driveway. This is downtown. Yeah. And the more that we limit the public access in the public realm.
So it just seems in my mind, this is an infinitely
solvable issue if the issue is only a matter of what ordinance vehicle it's written under versus what actually happens on the construction there. And
to be very clear, the expectation is because these parcels are under common ownership, not only that, I don't know the state of the city, what is currently the city-owned parcel, but the expectation would be that the three parcels that came in for rezoning together, the three of them would be under consideration for coordinated development in association with the other parcels on which the city has participated in development.
Okay. And then lastly, not germane to this discussion, but I do want to say that the property owners work with the city on the expansion of the Bilbo Canal was a great benefit to our community, and kudos for them to coming to the table to us. Thank you.
Any other questions? I have a question, Mr. McCorkle. The property that your client has extends beyond or south of the proposed building. There's like a section of land there. Back to the connectivity with the Eastern Wharf Avenue, I think it would be wise, instead of just having a turn corner there, to actually go ahead and create an intersection in anticipation of future connectivity to Perry. Since, I mean, on that particular image, it doesn't really show, but the lot line extends further south, that kind of little.
Our lot line is right here.
Exactly.
It doesn't actually get to Wheaton, it doesn't get to Perry Lane, but it stops right here.
But Perry Lane is further south of here. My suggestion is that the extension from Eastern Wharf Way continue past the building in anticipation for future connectivity to Perry.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's not anything back. Again, it's fenced behind us, but otherwise, it would be easy enough to connect to if that ever happens.
Gotcha. Do we have any public questions, comments? Any discussion? I'll open the floor for a motion. Mr. Nstrika, will you turn your mic on for me, please?
So I'd like to add 2 cents in. I understand the concerns about going outside the requested block entrance, but I'm also looking at this as someone that can walk out my front door and see this project from an absolute standpoint. Would I rather see what's there now, or would I rather see a great amount of development that makes the city grow further? I always thought this was sort of low-lying, unbuildable land. I think the idea that someone wants to build this over here is amazing, and even though maybe a little bigger scale-wise, it's certainly better than having nothing.
The only other discussion that I would add to that is on that particular plan, I didn't see any detention ponds, so I'm hoping that the Bilbo Canal would be sufficient to handle any kind of water runoff, especially since we just raised President Street significantly to avoid flooding on President Street.
John Giordano with Thomas and Hutton. I can go ahead and address that. So that was part of the development agreement. With the extension of the Bilbo Canal, that actually provides 100-year conveyance so that no detention is required. So that we went through all the calculations with the City of Savannah Stormwater Department during that development agreement. We actually already have a development permit for the site to do clearing and grading. We worked with the city when they extended the canal. They've actually got a connection point for us to go ahead and tie directly into the canal. So all that was addressed through that extension of the Bilbo. We do still have to meet the water quality requirements, and so we will do that as we go forward with the development permit, but it's just the water quality.
I hope the numbers are correct because that canal gets quite full after a heavy rain. So, all right. Entertain a motion.
I motion to grant petitioner's request with the restriction that applied to the specific proposed apartment building.
Second.
Motion has been properly moved and seconded, so we will take a vote. Ms. Bowles?
No.
Mr. Irvin?
No.
Mr. Kegler?
No.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
No.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
No.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too vote no. The motion failed on a 6-5, if I'm correct in my adding. Oh, can't count online, so. Which one was yes, one was no, so it still fails. Right? They don't count as, yeah. So, and one was a yes and one was a no, so it wouldn't change the outcome. So I'll open the floor to another motion. Is there a motion to be made? I would imagine the next logical motion would be for denial or continuance.
Jeff, don't you gotta make a motion to continue this?
Bowles, second.
All right, it's been properly moved and seconded. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Do we have to include in the motion when back. We're continuing it to?
Date certain.
I believe.
Please continue it for date certain. So is it for the next meeting?
Are we giving instruction to the petitioner as to what we're wanting to see back?
The next meeting is April. The next meeting date is April the 22nd. And then April the. Okay, but in order to probably deal with timing, it'd probably be the 22nd, but it's the first or the 22nd. And then you need to give instruction about what you want to see come back.
Okay. So what guidance are we offering the petitioner?
Well, this is Jay. What I heard from the discussion in the room, but I'm wrong because not everybody had the discussion. Did people have a problem with the development or the problem with the process by which we were allowing the development?
I'm not sure that people indicated through their vote on which one.
Okay. Because I think I'm guessing that staff is wanting to know is whether or not we're bringing this back or we're asking staff to think of it differently when it comes back. Is that what we're asking for, Ms. Wilson?
If I could throw a helpful note out there, I would recommend that we ask for a master plan, just a coordinated master plan for the petitioner's, you know, co-owned property. The properties that are under their control at a bare minimum, ideally all three that were rezoned, but again, I'm not sure of the state of that. So,
what does the petitioner think about that?
I mean, obviously we would have to discuss it with our client. There's no requirement on the zoning ordinance for us to provide a master plan over all this entire portion of property. In fact, we went through this process in 22.
Mr. Cole, if I may just pause for a moment, just because we have a motion on the floor, would you like to withdraw the motion while we discuss this?
Jeff Nutrigo, I'll temporarily withdraw my motion.
Thank you. Continue.
I mean, there's no requirement in the ordinance under any zoning ordinance for us to provide a master plan for the site. When we originally went through this in 22, I believe it was the city that requested us to do DC on this property, and we negotiated kind of what it was going to be. And so that's what it is. I don't think my client's going to rezone the property into a PUD because they don't know what the rest of the project is going to be or what uses it's going to be or what the development is going to look like. And so this, like virtually every other piece of property, is going to be done in phases as, it will be done in phases. So we do, which is why our development agreement, our zoning says that we have to, it's to be done in, it anticipated to be done in phases, with each phase having a master, a general development plan that came before the MPC. And so we're following that procedure. I don't think I'm in a position. Again, I have to talk to the client. I don't know if I'm in a position, but we're certainly happy to try to come back and see if there's some way to sit down with staff and address concerns that might exist. Again, we've put in there already that the roads are going to connect as we move to the west. And so other than that, without knowing the uses for the site and without rezoning the property, I don't know how to master plan the total site. And so again, I'm happy to continue to have that discussion with staff. We can bring John in and talk about what we might be able to do to make this more palatable, but I'm not sure I know how to provide a master plan for the whole site, if that's what the request is.
If I may, we just kind of very quickly pulled up the 2022 report. I don't think it has to be that complicated, Mr. McCorkle. I think that what, at least from the staff standpoint, you've got three parcels of land. You've got an agreement that you reached with the city regarding what the zoning should be based on the work that you did on the canal. That was done. You've heard the city manager talk a lot about connection and connectivity, which is one of the things that is important to us from a public safety standpoint. If nothing else, having some type of planned development or small PUD could be general, and it could show at least some connectivity that is needed in order to make sure that you're ensuring, as you're selling off parcels, that you've got those roads in place. But we basically recommended that a general master plan be done in phases, and that it comes back to the MPC. So all we're doing is asking for the master plan or for that piece to come back. That's what I'm hearing the board say. But that is what was recommended
right
at the time that it was approved the last time. That was part of the approval process.
Which we thought is what we were doing, which was bringing back this general development plan for the first phase of the project. Obviously, all future phases will come through. But I'm happy, if we have a continuance, I'm happy to sit down. And there may be a way to skin this cat other than having a full-on master plan. There may be a way to address connectivity questions or – so we'll – you know, if I'd rather a continuance than a denial, obviously. And if we need to sit down and see if there's a way we can make everyone feel better about the concerns and address the concerns but still leave the property zoned as it is and as was intended, then that's what we'll try to do.
And if I may, I think that the thing that you've got to remember is just because the board is asking or there's discussion about a master plan doesn't mean that your underlying zoning goes away. It just means that you're now looking at some of the other components that are needed based on how the other property has been developed since 2022 to ensure that you've got some of the things in place that's needed in order to have that whole side of the street function the way that it should. I would suggest, and you can talk with your client or whatever, but at least by continuing it until the 22nd, it gives you an opportunity to talk with your client, to talk with us as staff, because today is March the
11th.
11th. You got St. Patrick's Day on Monday, so I'm not sure many people are going to have conversations during that time.
Is the 27th the next meeting?
The 22nd.
First is the next meeting, but it'll be too late.
The first is the next meeting, but the 22nd of April is the next meeting after that, and it gives you a little bit more time to talk to your client and to work with us to so that we can come up with something that we can all agree on. But your underlying zoning does not go away if you do this.
Can we calendar it? I would make the request. Can we at least calendar it for the first? And the reason I ask is because, one, we have contract pressures on the site, and everyone will be very motivated to get it addressed. And two, I'm out of the country on the 22nd. So can we at least attempt, that's why I wanted to check, for my wife divorces me. Can we at least attempt to come back and on the first, and if we're not ready and we have to take, then we'll.
I will say that we will as staff move as quickly as you all move with regards to coming forward with regards to something that we can bring forward to the board.
Okay.
That can be approved.
Kind of following up on what the city manager just asked, I guess it comes down to the folks who were at no. If they're no because of the basic characteristics of the project, and there's no way for them to get to yes, then there's not a lot of point in continuing it. But if it's no because of a process reason, and your concerns could easily be addressed by some alterations to the
I don't think we can anticipate, though, what they'll present to us.
I was just saying, for the purpose of a continuance, it kind of falls on the no folks.
I'll speak up. I said no, and my no was essentially because I was trying to figure out how do we achieve the connectivity and such in the vehicle for this whole passage of it. In theory, I'm not against the development. I do want to have some type of vehicle for us to almost ensure that we start to introduce the connectivity and see what that even looks like and what the approach may be.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. And I also echo that my primary concern is with connectivity. And I just don't want to have a shadow of a promise to do it and not have it kind of enshrined. Any more discussion, or are we ready to submit another motion? Ms. Mills.
If I may, this coming back would be a master plan, not a PUD, because we're not changing your zoning. So that impacts advertising and things of that nature. So we're just basically asking you to come back with a master plan that moves forward with your request, so that when it goes to, you know, moves forward, it's attached to something and addresses some of the concerns.
That connectivity could be your hardship reason.
I'll make one last comment. I do think it's important for us to state too, for the board specifically, for some reason in 2022, all of the public bodies made a decision that DC was the best move forward as it relates to the Bilbo Canal improvements, as it relates to the rezoning. I can't remember what all of those reasons were, but they were there. And so just to note that, you know, when we move the goalposts on folks, you know, sometimes we need to move the goalposts, but, just to be aware of that, and maybe it'd be helpful for staff if there were those issues to come in the future that we kind of did a little look back on why decisions were made, especially if they were so recent. Okay. Thank you.
I agree, Mr. Milder. Because I do feel like there is, in a sense, a moving of the goalposts. However, I think as this body, I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that if we did make a mistake previously as a body, whether it was us or not, for the sake of a smart and well-developed city as we grow and expand, sometimes we may have to correct course. And that's essentially my justification for this now. We need to make sure that legally we are doing what it is that we're supposed to do and make sure that from a ordinance standpoint, we are not coloring outside of the lines. However, I do feel it's imperative that we make the appropriate adjustments for 2025 and beyond, as 2022 may have lended itself some different conditions in which we make these decisions.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. And I'm going to go ahead and make the motion that we continue this April 1st.
Second.
Properly moved and seconded. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Urban?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Natrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mrs. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Rywoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries. We will see it on April 1st. There is no other business, so if there's nothing further, we're adjourned.